Okay, let's get going. Thank you for attending on this beautiful day. Does anybody have any burning questions left over from last week from the presentation by Dr. Jessica Rose and Adam Shepherd? I got some stuff, so I'll show you that.
A couple administrative things.
You know, we're coming to the end of the quarter, and actually there's four lectures left,
and one of them is a
tour, and on the last week there's the student presentations, which are 2 weeks from today. So I hope the student teams are getting their act together, and I should address them and say if you have any problems at all with your project, don't tell me at the last minute. I can help you now, but I'm not sure I can help you the day before or the hour before presentation, so please let me know if you have any difficulties at all. So I should mention that, the next lectures, well, including today's lecture, are really going to be excellent lectures. And I know some of you who are taking the class for
just one unit might have
already attended your minimum number of lectures, but I encourage all the students to attend these next lectures because they're really going to be good. And they'll be cookies, so I don't know what other motivation I can provide, but that's it. And I know a lot of you are looking forward to the summer,
and I wanted to make you aware of one
summer opportunity.
It's the Surrey, the Stanford Summer Undergraduate Research Institute in Mechanical Engineering,
and this is a great opportunity for students to work in a research lab over the summer, and when you in this program, you get paid a stipend just for working in the lab. And John did that last year, John. And so if you want to know firsthand about the experience, John can let you know. But if you want to stick around here, this is a good way to spend your time. And just search for Surrey on the Stanford website, and you'll get information. You have to apply. Last year, I think they had over 50 applicants, and everybody made it in, and so everybody was happy, and it was a good experience. Right, John?
Yeah, John agrees. I got some videos to show you,
and remember last week there was a question to
Jessica Rose about the therapeutic effects of functional electric stimulation.
Well, wouldn't you know, there was an article about that.
That I just saw between then and now. So here's an article about a treatment that delivers FES to paralyzed muscles with people, and they've actually appears to actually revive their muscles and restore hand function. And Professor Rose commented on this, and she said there is a neurotherapeutic effects of FES, and she said that FES improves muscle fiber size and physiology, making for a stronger muscle contraction for a given level of voluntary or electronic application. There's also evidence that incomplete spinal cord injury, FES, may lead to recovery of voluntary movement, thought to be mediated through new connections in the spinal cord. It is thought that activation of muscles may serve to direct and attract sprouting of neurons in the spinal cord, not in the brain, in the spinal cord, specific to the motor neurons of the activated muscles. And she said the therapeutic effects are sort of critically timed during recovery, and their intensity of treatment may influence the
response. So
that's sort of neat. And she also talked about neural prosthetic effects,
which is
the movement. And she's talking about the upper limb specifically because, you know, you don't bear, unless you walk on your hands, you're not bearing a lot of load in your arms and upper body. And she differentiated that from the lower limb,
where you're actually bearing weight, you know, on your muscles, with your muscles and your bone system. So she says in walking situations, a combination of orthotic and, well, she actually means, yeah, orthotic and FES devices may best serve patients with spinal cord injury.
And she said in cerebral palsy, they're hoping to strategically time FES activation patterns that will increase hip and knee extension and improve gait. So let me show you this this short video. So I should mention that the FES may have two ways of improving people's function. You know, one by increasing the muscle, the physiology of the muscle, its strength and size, and also by recruiting more neurons to activate the muscle. So those are the two things we're talking about. Oops, and I lost my... This has been in the news this past week about this reporter who had basically a migraine, a complex migraine, whose symptoms mimicked a stroke. She had slurred speech, and it turned out that she was okay, and it was just a blood vessel in her brain that was pressing against a part of her brain that caused it to temporarily malfunction. So this can happen to a lot of people, and it could be, you know, the first signs of a stroke as well. But let's take a look at that.
Well, a very, very heavy vertation tonight. We had a very Derrison bite. Let's go ahead, Terrace Chase, and look through the hand and head.
So these are the kinds of symptoms that you get from aphasia as well. You get speech, and you get the inability to say what you really want to say. And so this happens a lot, and it happens on the left side of the brain, which is the side of the brain that Senator Giffords was shot in. So I suspect she might have some speech problems, because that's the area that speech is generated in. So I just wanted to bring that. Did anybody see that on TV? It's sort of scary to see it live, but. Hi. Finally, I have two more video clips. And one of them has been incorporated into a commercial. But I just wanted to show you these because, you know, people who use wheelchairs want to be challenged and want to have a chance to be cool and want a chance to do all sorts of things. So there's this one guy who's really been sort of the leader in doing flips with his wheelchair. So... pretty awesome, isn't it? Well, let me show you something that's twice as good. Okay. Let's see if we can do this. You ready? So this is his chance at being cool. So this is a wheelchair athlete that did single and double backflips in his wheelchair. Okay, so next Tuesday we have our second tour. We're going to the VA Medical Center in Palo Alto, and we're having a tour of the Spinal Cord Injury Center there, hosted by Dr. Graham Creasy. And like our tour to Willow Garage, I have a sign-up sheet here with for carpooling, so I'll pass that around. So the drivers sign up, and passengers sign up with drivers, and make sure you include your cell phone number so everybody can get in touch with one another. So, John, are you going?
I'd love to.
Okay. So the driver should sign up first, and so that the passengers have a range of choices on who to carpool with. So once it goes around, we'll have it here, and I'll have it here on Thursday as well. So how do you get there? If you're in a car, yeah. Well, Stanford is over here, and so you just go out to UniPro Serra, and go down this way past Page Mill Road here, and then there's a stoplight on Hillview. You make a left turn on Hillview, and make an immediate right on Miranda, and you'll be in front of the VA Medical Center. And you make a left turn into the hospital grounds at the American flag. You can't miss that. And so you're coming down Miranda, which parallels Foothill Expressway, and you go into the entrance, and you have to drive all the way up here, and then you can park in this parking lot over here. And your destination is this entrance over here. And just inside the entrance on the right, the first room on the right, is our meeting place, E111, and that's where we will start there, and Dr. Creasy will give us a short presentation and a tour of the spinal cord injury clinic there. And so we're going to try to meet up there at 4:30, and I understand that
many of you might have to leave at 5:30, and you're welcome to do so, but people who can stick around after then are welcome to do so. We'll also have a demo of a driving simulator that I worked on many years ago, so you'll see that as well. Any questions?
One of the Marguerite shuttles there, I think either A or C?
Right. Yeah, check on the Marguerite if you can't get a ride. I'm not sure how the timing works. And when I looked last year, the last bus came back at like 4:30. So check on that. But I think we'll have enough drivers for everybody to get over there. And if you can't make it, let me know beforehand. Okay. On Thursday, we're going to have Chris and Michael Bain, and you might remember them from the project presentations on the second class session. There's a team working with them on a project, and I had them on the schedule because they're an example of a small company, a startup company with a couple new products. And I want you to get their story about how they got started and the challenges that they go through and things like that. So they'll be here on Thursday to talk about the history of their company, and we'll show off some of their products. Okay. But today, I have my colleague Ray Groth in the house. Ray is the director of the Rehab Engineering and Assistive Technology Project at San Francisco State University, where he has taught classes in technology for people with disabilities since 92. And he's worked directly with hundreds of people with disabilities, with a wide range of disabilities, providing assistive technology solutions. So for each one of the clients he serves, he goes through that whole cycle of understanding what the problem is, what the need is, and brainstorming ideas and trying things out. So he's done that repetitively, hundreds and hundreds of times. He not only conducts assessments and matches people with the appropriate existing technologies, but is often found in the shop working on new ideas. He is certified as an assistive technology professional and rehab engineering technologist from ResNA. And Ray also serves on the board of directors with me at ResNA. So let's join me in welcoming Ray to our class.
Thank you. David's been trying to get me to come to this class for a few years, but he finally said he was offering cookies, so that got me over here. Let's wake this up. Okay, function. Yeah. How many of you are interested in design? I would imagine that's why a number of you are here. If you were doing product design, trying to engineer solutions for a lot of people, and someone said, well, you know, these ring binders are really hard for people with limited hand strength to open. You'd get together with whoever, come up with the next great design for ring binders. And you've seen some different ones on the market, some of just different approaches to the concept. But if you're someone like me, and working, say, with someone with a disability in a job situation, and there's a whole wall of binders, and they have to be inserting stuff and taking things out. I've worked with someone in a law library. They're always doing this. And that person has limited hand strength. Well, redesigning the binder isn't exactly going to do it in the short run. But you might come up with something as simple as two lever extensions, which you slide over the tabs and open and close with a little strength. If you were trying to sell it and make money off it or whatever, you might come up with some machine piece of aluminum that really was anodized and looked nice. But if you just wanted to quickly whip something out for somebody, you might take a couple pieces of electrical conduit, come to size, crimp them in a vise, and wrap them with electrical tape. Does the same thing. That's what I do in a nutshell. The RET project, we've been working in the area providing technology for people with disabilities since 92. I have a couple of associates who, I'm based in San Francisco State. I have a couple of associates who are in the East Bay, and we pretty much travel the whole Bay Area working with public and private agencies and companies and individuals. Most of my work is with the State Department of Rehabilitation, whose goal, mission, is to get people with disabilities employed. Largely, I work with them because they're one of the few agencies that have money for this kind of stuff. It matters. And we provide just a whole full range of services, from the evaluations, looking at for computer access, things like that, job site accommodations, as mentioned, custom design modifications, fabrications, set up, troubleshooting, training, support, the whole range of activities. Let's get the right... Okay, now, for any person wanting to work with someone with a disability and helping design some product or solution, I would say that you really have to set the stage for it. One of the things you need to do is overcome attitudinal barriers. And what do I mean by that? I'm not going to spend half an hour talking about that, but it means that we all have preconceived notions about someone with a disability, people with disabilities. We look at someone in a wheelchair. We see somebody with a guide dog. We see somebody with a communication device mounted on their wheelchair. We see somebody who's strapped to their wheelchair so they don't fall over. We assume certain things about that person. Now, it could be assumptions that we've integrated through growing up in the society, and it has shifted over the last 20, 30 years, but we still carry with us the negative stereotypes, especially people who can't talk, maneuver by themselves. We also, if we know somebody who rides a wheelchair, then we assume other people who ride wheelchairs are like that person. Think and talk the same, or have the same needs. And that could be really very far from reality. Often we run into situations where an engineer will see somebody going down the street in a wheelchair or having certain difficulties using their equipment. They say, oh, I know what you need. And they'll go in the shop and come out a month later and say, here it is. Isn't this great? Aren't I wonderful? Figuratively speaking, but we've seen products that actually come out to market that, what were they thinking? Who did they talk to? What were they involved with when they came up with it? So you got to know about the user's needs and abilities. And if you're designing for a larger group, you really have to understand the parameters of that. We're not talking about designing mass market items here. And even with mass market items, when you do that, you have to say, who am I leaving out? What percentage of people won't be able to open this device or figure out how to do it or reach the buttons or figure out which button does what? The way to success, and some of you are doing that now with your projects, is to collaborate with the end user. And that is not... it's not talk to the end user. It's not ask questions of the end user. It's not measure the end user. It's collaborate with the end user. What I like to often say is that the person with a disability is an expert. They're an expert in their disability, and they're an expert in what they can and can't do and what works for them. And if you don't appreciate that, you're going to lose a whole lot of really critical information and often get it wrong. there's other factors involved. Because also the person who you're trying to design for, or the group of people who have been working and struggling with these issues for a long time and maybe been trying some things out. They know why certain things don't work. They know what their reach range is. They know why other products aren't doing it for them. There's also a couple other beneficial factors for collaboration is that one is that you get buy-in from the end user. You get them, it's their project too, it's their effort too, and so they will, if it doesn't work, they're not going to just, tried it, didn't work, I'll go back to what I was using. They might have more of a stake. Well, maybe if you did this, maybe if you did that, and they're not, and if the results are disappointing, there's not like, well, you let me down. It's a group process, and often you can get not all the way, but at least part of the way in what you're trying to do. And also the other thing that people, engineers and professionals with letters after their name, do way too much is dictate solution. Again, I know what you need. This is not, as probably has been mentioned, assistive technology is not medical rehabilitation. It's not therapy. It's not fixing a broken or missing limb. It's providing tools for somebody to do what they want to do. So a doctor's going to write a prescription. We don't, in this field, write prescriptions. We don't just tell. We come up with joint solutions. No offense to therapists in the room, whatever. I think you know what I'm saying. Now, I know you've talked about the problem-solving methodology in this class, and any good engineering program will talk about it. But I'm going to run through a few things and focus on one of them briefly. Okay, identify the problem. There's a problem as stated, and then there's a problem as it actually exists. Very often people say, oh, I need a left-handed keyboard. They got it solved. Okay, let me go and bring out all my one-handed keyboards. But maybe the problem when you start talking is that their little finger, because they had their stroke, their little finger is numb, and they hit the wrong keys without knowing it. Does it need a one-hand keyboard? Well, maybe, maybe not. But finding out what the problem really is, and that's by digging into it and analyzing the problem and the situation and all the pieces to it before then you can say, okay, this is the real problem we're trying to solve. Research what has been done. David and I have been around long enough to see new products pop up on the thing. Everybody is brand new, and nothing about this people who are speaking on Thursday. I don't know their products. There's always great products coming up, but there's also reinventing the same damn thing, essentially. And people thinking that it's, the greatest thing, but it's been done before. A lot of times products come and they go. Any good design projects should start with a patent search and Google search these days to see what's been happening. Again, people with disabilities, the end users themselves, will know better than you what's come and gone off the market or what's been tried. And then you do your process of ideation and evaluate them and pick the one you're going to work on. That's fairly standard stuff in this process. And then you try to implement solutions going into it knowing it's an iterative process, that you're not going to get it right the first time. And that you keep learning and working on it. And don't forget the follow-up. See, the trouble things with design projects in schools is that the semester ends, we're gone. And even if you've delivered something to a lucky consumer, doesn't mean that they have any follow-up when it breaks. But at least it's an educational process, right? The main thing that I want to stress on is the importance of the problem analysis. That really understand what the person's goals are and what tasks they want to accomplish. It's not just, well, I want to ride a wheelchair. Where do you want to go? What places can't you get to now? What heights do you want to reach? What turning radius do you want to have? Why do you need a new wheelchair? Understand the person's abilities. Don't just guess at it. Don't just, again, assume it. really work and do testing and measurements when you can. And really importantly, the environment, the physical environment. I worked with somebody who got a brand new wheelchair from a vendor and from a hospital, prescribed it, and they get home and they can't get into their modified van. So they've got this van that spent $30,000 modifying it, and they can't fit in anymore. And now what are they going to do? Department of Rehab's not going to buy them a new van, but that's the kind of thing. If you don't understand the whole picture, you can make some serious mistakes. Social environment. Does the family support it? Do they have enough care providers or skills and resources themselves to set things up, to get things in position, clean it, maintain it, know where to go when maintenance is needed? Economic. Do they have money to get it? Do they get money to, again, fix it, maintain it? Those kind of issues can make or break a solution. Personal preferences. Well, now you got colors, I think. You used to have chrome, right? Now we got, that's not quite cherry red, that's more of a burgundy or something, with a little flare on your wheelchair. Sorry to pick you out, but you're there. But you got a lot of choices. I've worked with people who spend more time, like say I do a lot of ergonomics and I help them fit them in a chair, an office chair. They spend more time picking out the fabric than they do picking out the chair. It means a lot to people, and you can't, and also changes in people's environment, their physical abilities, and their and what you can anticipate. Testing, reworking, training, and follow-up. Those, the project's not done when the item is delivered or sent off to manufacturer, whatever. Now, there's a cost hierarchy of technology solutions. Pretty obvious on the face of it. If you can get it as an existing mainstream product, not labeled technology for some people with disabilities, that's going to be most available and the cheapest. Then there's an existing specialty product. There's lots of catalogs where you can order things out of. That's going to be better. More expensive, harder to get, but still pretty doable. Then if something doesn't work, you modify it to try and make it work for that individually. And finally, custom design and fabrication from scratch. I like doing that. I have slides. I don't have slides of the things I help people buy. but that's the last of it. That's the last choice, is to start from scratch on things. Now, custom work's needed because of the individual nature of the disability. The world is designed for able-bodied folks, and so you can't always manage the built environment and the equipment. They can't handle the equipment. And off-the-shelf products often just don't get into the right height and position and whatnot. But when you start there, and this is where we're getting some topic that's pretty significant for me, is if you want to be successful, you have to keep it simple, stupid. Every engineer knows the KISS concept. So keep it simple, stupid. So why, I'm sure you've heard about it before, so why is that important in this kind of situation?
More complexity equals more failure possibilities.
That's one of them. That's the real one. What's another? Money constraints. Yeah, it's more expensive. A lot more expensive sometimes.
More difficult something to use or to learn, kind of the greater barrier for entry, like a new user.
How do I work this thing? Right. Yeah, in the corner. You might have fun in your shop building a great device, but you might be missing the whole point of what the person really needs or wants. That's a good thought. So what I'm saying is don't over-engineer the solution. Even though you're engineers, I have some engineering students working with me at times, and I just say, no, too complex. Make it doable. So here's a slide of somebody who, with rheumatoid arthritis, who has very limited use of her hands, and she tends to open this file drawer at her desk by hooking her toe underneath a little lip on the pull handle on the drawer. So she wanted to do that with, again, this was a lot of hassle. So trying to figure out what's an easier way to do it. I also with my hand. Well, I put loops on the drawers, both for her hand and her feet. And just rubber loops made out of electrical cord. Put into a piece of wood that I stained nicely to look the same color. Same idea for someone who's quadriplegic and has trouble pinch grip. So put a loop on the file drawer, got a file cabinet that he can ride up alongside, and added loops onto the hanging file folders. Here I used a phone cord staple to the file folders. I worked with somebody on his own who would go to Starbucks every day and pick up his coffee in a little bag, and then he'd cut off the string handles and some of the paper and have his assistant staple them to the file. So he made his own hanging file. Anything I do, somebody's invented five times over. Okay, real quick. Here's a woman who, the bad back, she's turning all the time to help somebody fill out forms at a senior center, and figured, well, if one pillow doesn't work, maybe two pillows will, but she's always twisting, whatever. No money for a bigger desk or change it. There's very little space. There's other people using it. So one solution was to just pull a board, make a board that she could put on her pull-out drawer, and now she has an L-shaped desk where she can just turn at the right height. When she's done, she can just take it off and stick it back under her desk for the next shift. Doesn't have to be complicated. There was a situation where there was a woman with CP, rides a wheelchair, got a job at Blockbusters, and was asked to reshelve videotapes, aging this a little bit. And because sometimes she'd drop it. And how is she going to pick it up? Well, we've had engineering students working on it. Jeff Simons worked on it. He's a buddy from ours in Sacramento. And people were coming up with, like, mechanical pincers, and she has very little grip and hand control and so forth. All these design projects around it. Okay, then if I got time to actually deliver something. So I got a suction cup on a stick. Okay, the stick is padded with pipe insulation. And then, okay, she could just reach it down, spear it with a suction cup, put it in her bag. Now, how does she get it off the suction cup? Well, there's a string tied to the edge of the suction cup and clamped farther up. So when these have little tabs, so you can pull them off the window or something by pulling the tab. So by bending them against in one direction, it pulls on the string and releases it. Another guideline for success is build it to fit the person and make it adjustable. As I say here, we have a motto, it's make it adjustable or make it again. There's this woman who, when I came out to measure her, she wanted something, we figured out the right height for a keyboard support for her. I went and delivered it, and then by the time we ended up, she said, oh, well, yeah, okay, but maybe a little bit lower, and maybe a little bit lower, and I ended up having to take like 6 inches off of it. So the next time I came, I made it adjustable with, is that pointer around? Nothing fancy, but the way I got some extension is I made legs out of long bolts that could screw up and down inside the housing of the box, so I can get like four 3-4 inches back here, and then I, by threading bolts through this part of it, I can change the angle. Just hardware store items. Somebody with a using a mouse stick to access a keyboard and a trackball, well, it became important to really tune that in if you're not going to hurt your neck after long-term use. So this is the stand it was on, where the keyboard tray and the trackball tray are independently adjustable angle-wise, and that's the mouse stick holder. But just using, again, hardware store items, just to give it... This is another approach where by changing the position of the bolts in this sets of holes drilled on the side, one could change the height and angle of a keyboard tray. Another guideline is expect the unexpected. And as David said, the more involved the technology, the more room for failure. Okay, here's a couple more complicated situations. It's a woman who's riding a wheelchair, has CP, nonverbal. This is her communication device mounted on her wheelchair. She accesses it through a light pointer on a headband off the side of her head. When she has it in working position, she can't see where she's driving her wheelchair because it's right up in there. Now, some folks took a couple years to get it, and $4,000 or $5,000 worth. They got her a track that would take the device and lower it and swing it or follow a track along the side of her wheelchair and stow it in the back. Which is almost the holy grail of these things, is to find something to get out of the way. It was 2 days before she ripped it off the side of her wheelchair because people didn't assess her driving skills and how much she actually was, how much she had to spare going through doorways. So this is my approach at it. And she could hit one switch and quickly... without any repeatedly sustained effort. You could just hit one switch, one place. Because she had a couple other switches she needed to open the door and things. So what I did is I had a linear actuator attached to her device, and on the cross mount, instead of having a fixed mount on the crossbar, I had bearing collars so it could rotate. So basically, when she activated the switch, it would run the actuator until there's the one switch, and she'd run the actuator until it was just turned 90 degrees. And then she'd hit the switch again and would rotate up. Expect the unexpected. The device worked fine. I was real pleased with it. Her mother wasn't pleased with it because a while after she got it, she went out, UC Berkeley student, she went out with her $8,000 device on her chair and got caught in the rain. Previously, she had stowed it in a backpack, and the problem was she couldn't talk without it, and she couldn't tell anybody how to take it out for me and put it up, so she always had to have an assistant with her. So the downside of keeping it up all the time is that she didn't pay attention to, gee, it might rain, maybe I should cover it with a bag before I go out or something. I mean, there's certain skills that she needs to learn about taking care of her equipment. But anyway, so they send it in for repair, and her mother made me take it off the chair. Life goes on. A simpler solution I'd like to find, but we haven't. This is another... a little more complicated one. And these are, you can see these are a little rough cut because I'm not spending my life in a machine shop. I'm just trying to get something. This person has a laptop on his chair. The way he has very limited hand motion, so he could only, he doesn't have a lot of range. And let's see if this shows it. Okay. Peeking out under here is this pink part. Those are the controls to his wheelchair. They're embedded in his lap tray. Yeah. So that then if the laptop is in position in front of it, he can't access it. He also doesn't have the strength to open the top of the lid, so he gets... and then when it's up, he can't see where he's driving either. So he can control two switches and sustain it and stop it and start when he wants. So that was a plus. So again, the linear actuator arm opens up the lid, just a mechanical arm opening and closing lid, and he can control it with a switch. The problem was the on-off switch, as you know, in laptops is way in the back, and he couldn't reach that far. So what I did was use a linkage with this little arm, and as the lid of the laptop opened up, this arm came down and pushed the button to turn it on, and then he would back it up. I'll get to that. And then another arm, the other switch, just pushed this big cam to raise up the whole device so he could get at it underneath. And that's the picture of the cam. So the answer is no. It's not adjustable because it had to be so custom tailored to that one unit. So when that got out of age, it didn't work for him anymore when he had to get a new computer. So there's the downsides of super engineering detailed activity. But it worked for him to that point. Then he dropped out of school or something, so I didn't see him again. Okay, now here's an example that my associate Ronnie Gall's been working on, where it's a then I'll show you some simpler stuff, but this is a cart, a pull cart for somebody who has very limited arm and shoulder use. So she needs to carry groceries and so forth, but she can't pull, she can't have stuff on her shoulders. So the idea is that this is a waist belt pack, and she could pull things hooked to her back, to her belt, essentially. Well, to a weight lifter's belt or something. So the trick is, it had to be small, portable. She had to be able to fold it up in to take it on the bus. It had to hold a certain number of groceries. And she lived on a boat, so it had to be totally impervious to salt environments. And so take up no space, weigh nothing, and easy assemble and take no hand use to manipulate. That's your usual design criteria in this field. So this is built was aluminum frame with using wheels that have disconnect, pop-off wheels that sold for people who, joggers and their trike, kid carts. And this is the bottom side of it with some locking mechanism. There was a brake mechanism in the back so it didn't go downhill. So this is the bag on it, designed to hold four shopping bags. And then this shows a little bit of the spring mechanism side, that it's an accordion, so it just kind of folds down out of the way. And then the whole thing comes out and fits into just a small number of parts that will fit into a bag. But any one part is within her design parameters. So that's a more complicated engineering activity that's really took a lot of trips working directly with the end user on what's going to work. But some other ideas. Okay, here's a setup for a person using a mouth stick, and there's a microphone for speech recognition, and this is a puff switch for turning on a telephone, and she had a answering machine, and the question was, well, she couldn't hit the buttons too easily on the answering machine. So we just made some brass tabs, brass fingers, that gave her bigger targets. We didn't rewire the answering machine. We just gave her bigger tabs so you had a bigger target to push the buttons. Microphone got in the way of using the mouse stick. Well, how are we going to get that microphone out of the way? Ronnie was saying, oh, we got this problem. I said, well, just unscrew it some from the base, the gooseneck from the base, so it swivels. Untighten it so it swivels, and then put a little piece up, bar, so she could hit it with her mouse stick. This guy with two prosthetic hooks, needing to access a mouse better. He was using a trackball, but he'd have his hooks pointed to the side to move the ball. Then he'd rotate his hooks down to hit the mouse click. Then he'd rotate his hooks back up. So when we see that, okay, we can do better than that. So what we did was take a now-defunct mouse that where the head moves within a one-inch space and wired into it, and had made a cup for his hooks on the for the head of the mouse, and then made separate left and right switches. So we didn't redesign anything; we just really modified to suit him. A lot of stuff is really straightforward. Here's a receptionist; he had a brain injury, not good coordination anymore. But he got a job as a receptionist. So he had to hold papers. We got a clipboard that he could work easily. He had to fold papers up. So we gave him a plastic template so he could fold. That was two-thirds the width of the page, so he could fold it over the edge and fold stuff to put in an envelope. Various clamps and letter openers and staple removers, mostly from, you know, hardware and office stores. And modified over-center toggle clamp to hold larger items for him. Here's somebody who worked in medical records back. They still have medical records in places. Of course, they're all going over computerized. But this is, she had one hand functional due to a botched surgery. And this is what she had to deal with. Just these rows of really tightly packed medical records, and she had to go in there and take some out and put some in. When you usually, if you go into something like that, you'll stick your hand in, push it aside, reach and take it. And sometimes she had to move whole rows over. It was a big, huge deal. So fortunately for me, there the shelves had a back, exposed back lip to them and a bottom lip. So what I did was I made something that a paddle that had a hook at one end that would hook over that back edge and a hook at the bottom edge. And I made it telescoping so that this is showing it hooked in place. And she would reach in, hook on the back, pull it, and hook the bottom edge. And therefore, she'd have two of them would just hold the files up on either side. I think, and the big spring inside there was, of course, a bungee cord, because we live by bungee cords and Velcro in this field. Of course, everyone else who worked there wanted these too. Somebody who has weakness in arm weaknesses, who rides a power wheelchair, go in the office. Okay, she's got a keyboard tray she needs to move around. Get into place. She doesn't have the strength to pull it out and grip it. This is all these machines she has to utilize, these copy machines. So put a rubber loop under the keyboard tray, and you guessed it, using electrical wire back cord. It's flexible and soft. Made a Lazy Susan. We're big fans of Lazy Susans as a way to get access to a lot of content and with a limited reach. We go to Chinese restaurant supply stores and use quip, you know, they already got them. And we just drill holes and stick dowels in them. And that way somebody can reach, access a lot of materials, files and file folders, whatnot, with just limited access to the side. She had to turn these lights on and off because she was the first person to come into the office. And the light switches were too high for her. So we put extensions on them and these long rods and got a little It shows how they're attached. Well, these extensions are what you use for Venetian blinds, to open and close Venetian blinds. So we didn't go think, what can we find? What's out there that could do it? And that's, we're always thinking, what is out there? Handle stuck onto the refrigerator. She couldn't pull open the lateral file cabinet, so she had a hook on the side of her wheelchair for her the leash for her helper dog. So we said, okay, well, let's put some bungee cords on your file cabinet, and then use your horse, trusty horse, your wheelchair to pull it open. And this is, you've seen that stick before. This is she can use this rod to push open the Xerox machine. A little bit different, again, and somebody who needed to access a lot of papers because she was doing kind of information and letters. She was responding to letters that people would send in. And they didn't want to, every time she finished one paper, to have somebody come over and stick another paper in front of her, because she could only hit a switch and use this a special keyboard with one finger. So we made a Lazy Susan, two tiers, with clipboards. And so she'd get at 12 documents at one time. And the question is how to rotate it. She couldn't physically move it. So we, hanging on cup hooks, of course, high tech. And we got a drive motor and a big pulley underneath the Lazy, as a Lazy Susan bearing underneath. And real briefly, I mean, there's the electronics in there, but basically I put these bumps periodically, and there's a limit switch. So when the limit switch would hit, the motor would run until it hit the bump, furniture tack, hit the switch, and the motor would shut off, and it would stay shut until she hit the switch again, and then it would go through the next cycle. And this is a picture of her using it. We do custom. So here is somebody who is an engineer, motorcycle accident, broke his neck, using a mouse stick. If anyone's done machine work, this is coolant, adjustable coolant hose parts that are good for holding a mouse stick in place. And a small keyboard called Little Fingers that they sell for kids mostly. And this is a head-controlled mouse. As he moves his head, it moves the cursor on the screen. And this is a microphone for speech recognition. And here we have the heart of it, all his four remote controls to control the state-of-the-art sound and video and system. And basically made a little Lazy Susan out of this one. And there's a little lever that... in a notch, and he can push away with his mouth stick, rotate its over center spring, and then he moves it, and then when he hits the next notch, it slips in and holds it in place. Okay, photographer with a back injury and can't bend down over the light table. Again, back in the day, they had slides, and you put your slides on a light table, and you bend over looking at it. And these tables would be... adjustable, but really heavy, good old heavy-duty stuff. So how are we going to balance it? Well, okay, let's get a pipe. I used to be a plumber, no problem. Go to the gym supply store, get a bunch of weights so we could counterbalance the thing so she didn't have to push too hard. But how are we going to keep it in place? Well, we've got a carpenter's clamp that is goes in one direction, and you tighten it up, but it won't go back the other way because there's a lot of, essentially, notches and plates in here which grip when they're going the wrong direction. Took the heads off and put it there, but then how am I going to release it? Well, you go to the bike supply store, get a brake handle and a brake lever and a cable and attach it to it with a spring release. So... down and dirty, perhaps, but that's how we get things done. A lot of folks with disabilities trying to get job experience, get jobs as ticket takers in movie theaters, you know, a few hours a day, whatever. Every movie theater wants you to do tickets in a different way. Some you cut them in half, some of you tear it, some you punch a hole in it. Sometimes they want to keep the stubs, whatever. So this guy didn't have very good control, and people have been doing this for design projects for a long time. And they've done some, you know, huge capacitor-driven punches and so forth. But here this guy slipped his ticket in a slot, a little V-shaped slot to help him guide it, and it was angled so his hand, because that's where his hand wanted to go, and it cut it in half. Well, how did he do that? Used an electric power scissors, they used to call them, with a couple extra larger batteries than what's built in, and a little and a rotating limit switch so that when the ticket went past the wire, it would turn on the scissors. Worked with a doctor who had a back injury and could no longer manage the stethoscope. Because, you know, the stethoscopes, they're pretty strong springs and they cross over. And he couldn't pull them apart to put them over his ears. So after working with him a little bit, just attached some stiff wire to it that would keep it mostly open. So it wouldn't open all the way, but it would keep it mostly open so he could overcome that. He could hook it in one ear with his partially usable hand and stick in his other. He couldn't press the heart of the stethoscope too easily against the patient's chest, so I made a handle for it. This is before I finished it, with a large grip so he could hold it. This is a woman who... usually you see her on the street with a device, communication device on her wheelchair, but she's most effective at home using her toe to work with her communication device. She's also got a laptop or keyboard for now her iMac, and the question, each time she wanted to go from one device to the other, she had to get repositioned in this beanbag chair that she's sitting in. So what we did was, well, we got some wheels from a rollerblade skates and made a cart that would let her just push. Here she's on a communication device, and here she's on her wheelchair. So she on her laptop. So she just pushes it back and forth. Another quick example. Here's a woman with MS who types with her foot because she can no longer use her hands. Now, she has a wheelchair, but she was transferring at great risk of falling to this office chair that doesn't provide her any support and to work with. She also uses the mouse with her foot. And so I was saying, okay, well, why are you transferring to the chair? Because I can't work in my wheelchair. Why can't you work in my wheelchair? Well, the footrest gets in the way. Well, why can't you swing the footrest out of your way? It's too hard. I look at it, there's a spring in there. That's a spring-loaded thing you have to overcome. I took the spring out. She could use it. But then, also, she was looking down at the keyboard and up at the monitor, up, down, up, down, up, down. So, went ahead and, when she got her new iMac, first, Ruby, or whatever the color was at the time, strawberry, I don't know. Anyways, got her a keyboard with 1-inch square keys, again off the shelf, a support for her heel, but here she is sitting in her wheelchair, and then I put this on bearings, drawer bearings, so that she could slide it over so to use the mouse with her foot. So she's still using her mouse, still use, but get her a better keyboard, and move the world rather than her having to position her chair going back and forth. Let me just see something. So, just this last one. There was this guy who had cellulitis, problems in his ankle, swollen, and he was a transcriptionist in a federal job. So what's he to do? He couldn't do those foot pedals anymore. And so... what I did instead was change those figure it out in talking with them, which of the three functions don't you know, because it's usually forward and fast forward and reverse. So he decided he didn't need fast forward. So I got two switches. I got an industrial spring switch put under each of his knee, next to each of his knees, and then made up a way that with two wing nuts you can change the height, angle, and extension of the switch. And all, since he had two different devices, I had to get information on the wiring from the company and make one junction box so he could use the same switch as for either transcription machine. And we had some accommodations that he got moved closer to the printer so he wouldn't have to walk over to the printer and had somebody else make copies for him, these kind of things. But the once I blew through the time, but what I want to say, it's all about the people. It's not about the technology. It's not about the design challenge. It's not about the patents. It's about the individuals who make up the user group that we're trying to address. So those are some simple and some complex, more complex examples, but they really just show how you can keep it modest and still get people what they need.
Thank you, Ray.
So, thank you.
I think we have time for a few questions, and I have a question starting off. So, are you on the books for repairing all these things when they break? I mean,
I have a message on my phone right now. Well, yeah, and that's a real thing. We don't want to come back. And sometimes things break and we'll go and fix them, sure. But we don't want to have to go back, so we try to keep it, again, durable and modest. But we don't want to overbuild because you don't really know if it's going to be work out until someone tries it for a while. So sometimes we'll mock it up, we'll do a test, and then they'll work it for a while, and then maybe we'll make it again more rugged. But that does come up. We can hear from people. Fortunately, a lot of times, you know, through Volk Rehab or whatever, they'll cover it. And sometimes I just do it as a pro bono thing.
Anybody else
have
a question?
Yeah.
How is your work funded?
Well, I'm based in San Francisco State, but I run a small nonprofit. It's a nonprofit through a foundation that's attached to the university. So we don't have any extra funds coming in. We don't. So we have to bill for our services. State Department of Rehabilitation. Some used to be from Veterans Administration. Some school districts. Some insurance companies and some businesses and private individuals. You got the money, I got the time. It's usually how it works. Yeah.
How much, you know, like showing you exactly, do you know how much your most expensive project?
The carrying cart that I showed you was probably the most expensive, partly because an insurance company was sitting on a pot of money to accommodate this person so we could charge. But it all had to be engineered from the get-go about size, weight, balance, what's going to be, what you can pull, what materials to use, how to design some of the quick releases. So that was probably the fabrication. Well, we did some preliminary testing and design concepts for the insurance company before they decided to go forward with it. But that thing is probably going to cost about $4,000 or $5,000. Yeah.
I was just wondering if the state budget for the kinds of stuff you do is in jeopardy.
That's always a question I ask every month, whether the funding is going to get cut. And they've cut personnel, and they've cut here and administrative costs, and there's a limit. Right now, with the Governor Brown state budget, the Department of Rehab is looking okay, but if certain Republicans want to cut federal funds. The Department of Rehab runs off of federal funding based on a state match. Every dollar the state puts up, about $4 comes in from the government. So if they cut across the board, it's going to have serious impact. So every week, I don't know.
And I know with the disability community and vocabulary, they're talking about, we're always talking about disability. So are you facilitating any kind of modification as far as daily use at home, like the bathroom, the kitchen, you know, how to get around the kitchen, how to use kitchen?
Yeah, I do. I have some slides of that. As well, but basic modifications. We don't do architecture. I have a construction background back when, but I don't do that kind of stuff. And it's mostly self-paid, but there's a lot more products out there, which is good because of the boomer generation, the aging population. People are seeing it as a market. And so they're coming out with a lot of fancier or more evolved things that go up and down, and lots of interesting cabinets that come down from the wall or insides of cabinets that move. So if you got the money, there's a lot of stuff, more stuff out there than there used to be. But we do some custom stuff for people who can't turn on their water or, you know, just stuff. Yeah, it varies a lot. I mean, the first ones I showed you about the moving the device, hitting that switch and all that, well, that took a lot of time. That's sort of off the books, trying to figure out the circuit for it and mock it up and bang your head against it and so forth. So I can't bill my regular hourly rate because it gets too expensive for the people who are paying for it. But a lot of the stuff, it's like, okay, I do a lot of my work on the weekend. I said, okay, I got to get in my shop and come up with a solution. And so it's under pressure to say, I can't diddle around on this. I have to come up and make something work because I'm seeing the person next Wednesday and I promised I could come up with something. So it really varies.
Thanks again, Ray.
All right. Thank you. I have some very basic flyers about our program if people know friends or whatever might want to get contact information. I don't do like the computer access stuff because there's so many great resources around, but I'll go off and work on helping people get it all set up in their house, like the ergonomics of it. How to fit a CCTV in with everything else without killing your neck and sometimes if you have one hand and you're trying to work on it with your new blind and you can't touch type and, you know, those kind of fun things. But
thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what kind of technology are you work with? Okay.
So
oh, okay, yeah. All right, thanks. Cookies! No. Good question. I have a history major, but then I worked in the. I was tinkered when I was a kid, and then I got into carpentry and mechanical maintenance and all that kind of stuff, and then got into this field.